Blog Talk Radio.
We're in Litwax anymore.
Certainly are not, friendo. We are in the internet. Come on, Ralph!
Holy cow! Look at all this stuff.
Whoa. This is the most beautiful miracle I've ever seen. But it's so big. It goes on forever and ever. How are we possibly going to find eBay out there, Ralph?
Hey, kid, don't worry. I'm sure there's someone out here could give us directions. Oh, look at that little egg guy. He's got on one of those hats that smart people wear. I bet he could help us. Come on.
Welcome, everybody. I am Travis Hobson of the Punch Critics, and that clip you just heard was from Break the Internet, Disney's sequel to Wreck-It Ralph, which is one of my favorite Disney animated films of all time. Of course it is. It's about 8-bit video games. How could I not love it? It filled with all of my favorite characters as a kid. And some of them returned for the sequel, but not many, because this one is a little bit different. As you get from the title, it finds Ralph and his sidekick, Beyond Sweet, journey into the internet to help fix her broken sugar rush. And of course, they have all sorts of adventures in the big, wide world, World Wide Web. I was fortunate enough to have a chance to talk with co-directors, Rich Moore and Phil Johnston, about the making of this film. And I'm joined by my buddy, Tim Gordon, who you've heard on the show plenty of times. We talk about continuing Ralph's hero journey that he began in the first film. The creation of Guy Gadeau's character, Shank, who's very prominent in the film. She kind of runs a twisted metal Grand Theft Auto-esque open world game that Vanellope falls in love with. And of course, we also have to talk about that scene with all the Disney princesses, because it's amazing. So here's my interview with Rich Moore and Phil Johnston. I hope you enjoy it.
After the success of the first one, and you guys were sitting down thinking about the creation of where would you take this character, I thought that what you guys came up with as a concept actually worked really well. And you were not only able to execute it, but opening up the vaults of the parent company.
Yeah.
You guys had a huge playground to play in.
Yeah.
How much fun was that in the creative process? And then after you guys were able to kind of get everything together in order to execute this story.
It's kind of like going into a museum or something and seeing like, oh, wow, this stuff is so cool. Wait a minute. We can touch this?
Yeah,
we
right,
can,
right.
Like, we can handle
right,
this?
Yeah, right.
We can play with this? Are you kidding me? You know, it was... in my 30 years working in animation, I mean, there's nothing like it. You know, I mean, these are iconic characters, you know, and what we wanted to do was satirical, you know, and to be kind of given the keys to the kingdom and told, like, you know, we like what you're doing with this, and we feel like why not have a little fun, you know, with our characters.
Right.
It was an amazing experience to be able to kind of, and we talk about it as kind of joking around with your family, you know, that you can kind of have fun satirizing those that you love, you know, and I think that's the best kind of satire,
right,
that comes from, like, deep love and respect for the subject matter.
As opposed to malice.
Like,
that's a different kind of
movie. Like Virgil Bill was saying, it's kind of like, you know, how he makes fun of his family, or kind of like pokes fun at like his dad, or I would poke fun at my mom or something. It's like, you know, you do it with kind of love and knowledge of what those people are like, you know. And I think it comes across, you know, well in the movie that way.
How did you guys come up with your vision of what the internet would look like? Like, when I was watching it kind of felt like a little bit of Summer Wars, a little bit of Ready Player One, but it was still its own unique thing. So I guess kind of talk to me about how you guys envisioned it.
Yeah, I mean, that it was very challenging, to be honest, because we had this idea, oh, a router will get plugged in and, you know, Ralph and Vanellope will go to the internet and screw something up, and won't that be funny?
Like, I love that first scene where they
back in 2013.
Yeah. Right. I love that scene where they go in there and they expect to find the internet, and it's just like an empty
box. And that's kind of where our brains were when we first came up with the idea. Okay, we start with an empty router. Then what?
Yeah.
But we do a ton of research on these movies, and the more we did, the more we realize the internet is kind of like a city, kind of a badly designed city, to be honest, because at the very bottom, like Rome or Istanbul, you have kind of the ancient city. And then rather than raise it or integrate, you know, a new version of the city, what they did is they just built on top of it and then built on top of that and built on top of that. And so we kind of thought of it that way. And once that metaphor emerged in our minds that it's like an ancient city where the old is at the bottom, and at the top you find, you know, the modern skyscrapers of Google and Amazon and eBay and whatever else like that. And so way down at the bottom you find Netscape Navigator and things that maybe aren't as familiar anymore.
The Friendster line got me.
Yeah.
I think I might have been the only one who got
that.
Because I remember using it. So I was like, Friendster.
Which tells you it has been a while.
So wait a minute. So I think, interestingly enough, aside from the relationship that they have and like all the fun that the film has, you actually even incorporate what I call kind of, I guess, universal themes when you talk about the theme of friendship, right? And you're looking at insecurities in a way, which you actually tie it into the story. How challenging was that, having the balance of all the fun that you guys have having, as you talked about the aspect of having the ability to play with all these toys, but also kind of infuse the story with something that will grip like more of the parents who are going to be taking these kids to the film?
I mean, these stories are nothing without that heart. And with all the visuals, all the sophistication of the animation, if there's not a simple, to your point, universal story with themes that we can all relate to, then the movies simply don't work.
Yeah, and like Phil said, that we did begin with a notion of, well, what if that thing gets plugged in, they go to the internet, you know? Okay, but why the internet? Why are we doing this, you know? Why when we buttoned up the first movie, should we do a sequel, you know, because it seemed like it sealed up really nice at the end. You know, he finally found a friend, Ralph did, you know, he never had one, finally got one, and he feels good about himself. And at the end of the first movie, the last line is, if that little kid likes me, how bad can I be, you know? I'm like, that is so sweet, you know, but then as we started to think about it, I said, well, that's not the healthiest attitude to have in life, you know, that he's defining himself like what Penelope thinks of him, you know, so what if she doesn't like him someday, you know, now where's that land him, you know, that
that's where that insecurity came from, you know, realized he still had a lot of insecurity and stuff.
So that was kind of the beginnings of, okay, there is another story in here, you know, he did not, you know, mature to become an authentic human being. You know, he is still putting a lot of worth, you know, on what other people think of him. But they still have this friendship, you know, so what happens if we start to drive a wedge through that? To what lengths will this guy go to try and hold on to this friend?
Right.
And that's where we started to explore these themes of like these kind of codependency and, you know, toxic relationships, you know, where one person thinks that they own the other person, that if they're not doing what I think they should do, then I'm upset and I need to get in there and manipulate and, you know, and almost act as this person's god in a way, you know. Mm-hmm. So once we started thinking of it that way, we thought, okay, there, it feels like there's the germ of, you know, an idea here that does feel universal, mm-hmm. you know, and is something that I think it is kind of important to talk about these things right now. You mm-hmm. hear people saying, like, you're my best friend forever. It's like, well, is that real? You know, if you're not, like, working on that relationship,
right.
do we really believe that when things change that we're going to be best friends forever? You know, and it's always going to be exactly like it is right now. So that was what we really wanted to explore. And we were kind of emboldened by working on Zootopia
mm-hmm.
because it felt like the audience is hungry for more substance in films like this. You know, it's okay in an animated film to talk about things that normally wouldn't be the subject matter of a cartoon.
Right.
In the first film, I believe you directed that one solo.
Yeah.
This one you guys are collaborating.
Mm-hmm.
How did your working relationship how did that change or evolve as you guys came together as co-directors this time?
Well, writing the first one and Zootopia, and so this is the third time
mm-hmm.
I've worked with Rich, and he's we're great partners,
mm-hmm.
I think, and it's always been a really open collaboration,
mm-hmm.
and he's obviously a great director, but also a very democratic director in that I never felt relegated to just the writer, quote unquote. It was always a much freer, open collaboration. And so yeah, when this one came along, I don't know why
well,
you why, I mean
Phil, I think on the first movie on Zootopia, Phil was doing more than just writing, you know.
I'd give him a shoulder rub. Get him a sandwich every now and then.
And I appreciated that.
Yeah.
It worked out.
But it was a long kind of sandwich.
Yeah.
But I felt like, you know, he's doing more than just writing.
Yeah.
He's a big part of, you know, making the movie, and it felt like he should have a directing credit. So really the job that we're doing has not changed.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like he's getting the credit that he should be at this point.
So we're talking about Zootopia. Is that up next for you guys? Are you guys crafting some ideas of where to take that story and that arc?
Tootopia?
I like it.
I personally haven't. This has been three pretty intense years making this movie. And the main thing I'm thinking about is a nap. So I haven't thought about Zootopia.
We've been kind of running at this pace since, God, man.
Two solid years.
Even before that, with Zootopia, was like fall of 14, you know.
There hasn't been a break.
As soon as Zootopia was done, it's like, okay, let's jump back onto Ralph, you know.
Oh, come on, man. Don't blink. Come on. Take a nap.
No.
Take a month off.
Yeah.
Utopia. Sleep when you're dead. As a video game fan, I love all the characters that always pop up in games. This is my favorite part of it. I love it when the Street Fighter characters appear because they're my favorite. I love Zangief.
Poorly.
You get Zangief and Chun-Li and I'm happy. Were there some characters that you didn't want to, that you couldn't use? Who were your favorites that you had to put in there, that you got in there? Who were some of your favorites?
I loved playing Pac-Man as a kid, so I was like, it has to be, it will not feel like a game about or a movie about video games if Pac-Man's not in there. Come on, you know, so that was important to me.
I'm with you. Street Fighter. I love Zangief so much.
Yeah. I love that he runs a book club. I think that's brilliant.
Russian literature.
It's so awesome. I love that. But wait, would you think about if there's a third movie, which I personally hope there is, would you think about expanding into online gaming more as a possible avenue?
Definitely. Yeah.
Look.
There you go.
And Slaughter Race was kind of our version of like an online racing games,
yeah,
like GTA or, you know, and there were other games that we, at one point, we had like kind of references to, but as the story changes, it's like,
yeah,
they kind of fall out. It'd be fun to, you know, to really explore that in earnest, you know.
Who came up with the idea for the Shank character? I loved her introduction as well.
She was in the very first draft of the script. There was,
mm-hmm,
a character in an online, Slaughter Race, but it was called, mm-hmm, Outlaws of Speed was its first title.
Yeah,
right.
Very Twisted Metal-esque.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I love that game.
And, and that very first draft had Vanellope meeting her, and remember she was taking,
mm-hmm,
him web surfing, like, she
right,
was all
right,
about,
right,
your life can't just be your work.
Yeah.
We should go,
mm-hmm,
surf the web. And they rode the old dial-up express train.
Things go through a lot of weird.
There was an orc named Lyle.
Oh,
like,
right. From World of Warcraft.
From World of Warcraft. That was part of her little crew. Like,
yeah.
So,
I'd like to see some of these early drafts.
Well,
yeah,
like Craig from Craig
List. Yeah. He was always just making lists. That's right. I forgot Craig.
Stay it in.
Right.
That would have been funny. I don't know what that is. Yeah.
Like, sometimes your darlings do get killed.
But Shank went away for a while on like a couple drafts and then returned probably on our third screening. So she was born early, then abandoned, and then returned to... So the iterations of this thing are...
Craig didn't
numerous.
Make it back in either.
No,
hey, Craig.
I
kind of want
to
meet Craig now.
Damn.
Oh, it's just like making a list.
I totally forgot that.
Oh, Jade kept Craig's list in the movie. That was my interview with Phil Johnson of Ralph Breaks the Internet. I hope you enjoyed it. You can find my review of the film over at punchdrunkers.com. I hope you go and check it out there. Thanks for listening.